Now, one of the things we talk about here on The Naked Scientist quite often are myth conceptions. This is bits of scientific dogma that are trotted out religiously, but actually they have very dubious scientific underpinnings. So I thought it'd be quite nice to ask our panellists whether they've come across any myths in their particular field. So, Kate, let's start with you. What's your choice of myth?
So a lot of times, like at museums or in toy stores, they'll have these compound eye glasses so you could see like a fly, because flies don't have eyes that are like ours. They're made up of thousands of these little facets. And so you can theoretically, you can put on these glasses and then you could see like a fly. But that is totally wrong, because the way that these glasses work is they multiply the image you're seeing into just thousands of the same image over and over and over again. And so it looks really crazy. But really, a compound eye works where each facet focuses on a specific point in space, and then they all get assembled like a pixel in an image. And so they just have a lower resolution image of the world than, like, say, we do, because our eyes are just different.
Don't astronomers do a similar thing with telescopes, Matt? They have telescopes that have individual little facets that can then take a miniature snapshot of a part of space that they're looking at, and then they reassemble the whole thing into a big picture.
Well, essentially what they're doing there is they make these new dishes, these reflecting dishes, out of all these segments, and they control those very, very carefully. So they're not really looking at a single thing. They're having to work together in unison to be able to focus something. But the ability of these new instruments is absolutely phenomenal. You have all these little micro motions on these mirrors to create an absolutely stunning image, even if the weather is absolutely terrible.
So, because you can manipulate each of the individual facets,
which you can
adapt what they're seeing to the conditions.
Absolutely. Adaptive optics. That's what it's called.
Now, the other thing it says here, your choice of myth is that black holes aren't holes.
Oh.
I'm disappointed.
Are you genuinely, Chris?
A little bit, because we all like to think of this sort of giant vacuum cleaner in space that's drawing everything in a bit. You're saying that's not
true? You can throw some sort of repugnant people in there. The idea of black holes, the actual term, I mean, it's kind of anecdotal, but it was actually coined during a lecture. Right. Before you talk about a black hole, you also have to take a step back and remind yourself what a black hole actually is. And most people who do anything with astronomy will say, okay, it's the end of a star's lifetime. A massive star's collapsed down. There's no more forces to prevent that core collapsing. So it's going to go all the way down. It's going to essentially go down to an infinitesimal point containing all the mass. Now, the reality is you can make a black hole out of anything. Okay, you can make a black hole out of a pen, you can make a black hole out of Chris, which I can highly recommend. Okay, all you have to do is compress him down incredibly small so that he actually sits inside what we call the event horizon. And when you go beyond the event horizon, not even light can escape from that body. Okay, so if you go near that event horizon, you won't necessarily be torn apart, depends on the size of the black hole, but you are going one way and one way only, and that's towards a singularity. Okay, and that is a point which is so small, we don't yet have an idea of how to describe it. We need something called quantum gravity. There is one caveat. If the black hole is spinning, you don't get a singularity. You have something called a ringularity. Okay, and there's these ideas that maybe we can manipulate those and create wormholes. And then maybe, Chris, you'll finally have your hole.
Well, one thing that is often trotted out is that at the centre of galaxies like our Milky Way galaxy, there is a supermassive black hole, and people say it's about the size of, say, Neptune or something, and its influence, or maybe a bit bigger, out to the size of where Neptune orbits, that kind of thing. So it's not literally a single point. There is something that's quite large sitting there. It has physical dimension.
What people normally talk about is the size of the event horizon. We consider that to be the surface, when in reality, it isn't. It's, you know, the definitions start blurring when we're talking about black holes. But that's normally what we discuss. We talk about the size of the event horizon. What's remarkable is that galaxies and the supermassive black holes grew together. Right, so something which is so small interacted with something which is billions and billions of times bigger. I think that's amazing. So it tells you the galaxy and the black hole had to know about each other, and that is phenomenal.
Warps your mind as well as space-time, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Patrick, what's your choice of myth?
So everybody knows about the risk of older mothers, you know, having children. But I think the thing that's not talked about enough is the risk of older fathers. I think we have all these about egg freezing, and we have all these societal norms that tacitly punish women for having children when they're older, but actually the father's sperm is constantly multiplying, and every time it multiplies, it makes mistakes and it introduces mutations. And so the older a father becomes, the more likely they are to have children with problems as well.
Well, the Rolling Stones are doing all right, aren't they, with a combined age between them of 7 trillion years or so. I can't remember what it is now, but they're all pretty ancient. They're doing okay.
Yeah, no, they're not doing too bad. It's about twice the risk or something from age 20 to 40 for men, and then it starts getting worse and worse after that. But it's just a roll of the dice every time.
Matt, don't get a stump for libel.
Right. Remember that Mick Jagger's trousers are so tight, I don't think he's got any sperms left.
I think we better phone our lawyer, Kate.
Do they just negate the effects of being old men by having children with very young women?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It takes two to tango, so maybe maybe that's the Rolling Stones secret.
So maybe that's what women should be doing.
Find yourself a nice 25-year-old man, yeah.
Let's talk about chemistry. Philip.
So my twisted myth is that chemicals that are made by plants and animals are somehow different to exactly the same chemicals if they're made in a lab. If you're talking about an absolutely pure substance, there is absolutely no difference between the two. If you're talking about having like a real life thing, it's very difficult to get very pure things. So if you were thinking about a chemical that you've isolated from a plant or an animal versus one that you've synthesized in a lab and not purified very well, then there would be differences between them because there'd be differences in the impurities in those things. But the actual chemicals themselves, no difference at all.
So when we talk about something being natural, actually it's just stuffed full of other stuff that we didn't know was in there, or we can't control the provenance of that. But something that comes out of a lab actually have a better chance, really, of controlling the provenance. So in fact, I'd rather have the lab version.
Yeah, potentially. And that's the other flip side of that, is that people kind of have this perception that a natural chemical is somehow better for you than one from a lab. But, you know, strychnine is a natural chemical, all of the poisons are natural things. So, you know, that's also another myth.
And of course, vitamin C has an E number as well, doesn't it?